go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. We are joining up, as always, with our super producer, Tyler Klang. And boy, howdy. I know I've said it in the past, Scott, but you and I are pretty lucky to live in Atlanta, Georgia, as car enthusiasts.
You think so?
I think we could do worse.
Oh, I think we could, too. I mean, we see a lot of variety, right? Mm-hmm. Primarily import cars. It's not really a lot of American-built cars down here. I mean, you notice a stark difference between, like, traveling from here to, like, Detroit, where I've been several times in the past several months.
Yeah.
And it's remarkable, the difference in the type of cars and trucks that you see on the road. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, we see a lot of exotics. We see, a lot of cars that are good year-round, which is really nice. You know, a lot of sports cars. People driving convertibles practically year-round.
All the time.
Motorcycles year-round. We're in a pretty good environment, really.
Yeah.
It's not bad at all.
Definitely a good climate. Now, I will say the summer gets a little rough for me, man. I always try to take whatever car I'm driving in just for a check before the heat really sets in.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, nothing worse than hot Atlanta summer and no AC.
Oh, yeah. You got to make sure that AC is ice cold when it's time to use it. Yeah. So, I mean, I think we do live in a great environment for I guess, an auto enthusiast, really. I mean, the roads are nice, right? I mean, we wouldn't have to deal with the freeze-thaw thing that they do up in the north as well.
That's true. And I hear the cops have finally gotten a lead on whatever gang of miscreants it is that goes around and puts those stupid metal sheets over just various arbitrary patches of road.
Those are our main complaints, I guess. That congestion, right? Densely populated city. Mm-hmm. I think we're approaching 7 million in the greater Atlanta area or something like that.
Wow.
Somewhere near there. It's around 6 or 7, mm-hmm. but it's a lot of people. And those are some of the statistics and some of the things that we're going to cite today in our episode. And this is just to be up front with everybody. This is what's going on. We last time, our episode focused mainly on the 10 most expensive countries to buy and own a car.
Right.
Okay, so we only got through these 10 countries, and we talked about it at the end of the episode where we were hoping to get to the United States and the cities that were the best and worst to drive a car or own a car. And then later on, I was thinking, wait a minute, this sounds really, really familiar. So I went back to my desk and I looked through my huge pile of notes, and I found that we did something very similar in August, I believe, August 9th of 2017. So this very year, we did a best worst cities to drive in episode.
Ooh.
Now, here's the interesting thing about this. I thought, well, oh, shoot, that kind of blows today's topic out of the water. We've already done this, right? Not so much the case, because the last time that we did this, it was, again, August, we followed a brand new Wallet Hub study, Wallet Hub analysis of lots of different cities in the United States, all the major cities in the United States. And they did a top 100, you know, from best to worst or worst to best, however you want to look at it. And we covered the entire gamut of what they look for in that study. I mean, like all the criteria that they have.
So much stuff. A lot of it's understandable, but they really drill down to a point where some of it seems, I don't know, a little – it's like they're overdoing it, you know.
How many hot dog stands are on every corner?
Mm-hmm.
No, they didn't do that.
but they did do –
car washes.
Yes.
They did car washes. It was – I mean, there were three or four main categories. It was like cost of ownership and maintenance. There was, of course, traffic and infrastructure. There was safety, access to vehicles and maintenance. And again, things like, you know, car washes were there, car dealerships per capita. There was quality of roads, quality of bridges. No way I'm going to read all these, Ben. There's 100 of them, it seems. But there were also auto maintenance costs and average car insurance premiums. And, you know, things like that were discussed. Now, some of that is going into today's study, the one that we're going to read, that has, again, a completely different list for the best cities for driving or best cities to own a car. That's also one of the differences. The last time we talked about it, it was the best and worst cities to drive in. Now, tell me if there's any difference here, because I don't know if there really is. Today, we're going to talk about the best and worst states and cities to own a car.
I argue that there is a deceptively large difference because, look, honestly, if you – just for an example, Scott, if you were to purchase a car in a very car-friendly state,
mm-hmm.
and you were to drive through California, you know, depending on the part of California you go through, you're not going to run into a lot of the expenses you would have were you to own a car in California. There's a very important difference there.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
Yeah, you're still going to pay way more in gas than you're used to.
So we're talking about taxes. We're talking about insurance premiums,
sure.
Things like that.
Registration, all of it. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I get it. All right. So maybe that is the difference, and we'll talk about, you know, what makes each state and each city kind of difficult for car ownership or really good for car ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And I promise we'll get to that. But I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew this, that the last time we went through this list, the best cities on the list, the list that we're going to have today is almost completely different. They only share one common city. So if you go back and listen to our August 9th episode, you're going to be confused. But again, listen to the entire list of criteria that we had for the best and worst cities last time, and it's different than what we're going to talk about today. And now, on the other hand, the worst cities for driving, the list is nearly the same. It only has three variations. There are three different cities that are on this list today that were not on the previous list, you know, that are substituted out for those. And I don't even know if it's worth going through them, but 7 out of 10 are the same on the worst list.
I would say it's probably best for us to either laundry list them or just point out the three newcomers.
Yeah.
Because someone is listening to this show and remembers our past episode and you thought you got away.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but there's no safety in waiting just a couple months, especially when we've got access to so many different lists. There's lists like this out there everywhere. Now, I want to also point out, just to be transparent about this, is that this list that we're going to go through today, these two lists that we're going to talk about, the worst cities and the worst states, best and worst, come from about a year prior, 2016. I guess, the states list comes from about 2011. I don't think this has changed all that much because it does have a lot to do with taxes. It has a lot to do with cost,
insurance.
Total cost of ownership.
Yeah.
Minor changes. So some of these might be jockeyed around a little bit, but really to me, one of the most interesting lists is the 10 worst cities to own a car.
Right.
And we'll follow that up with the best cities as well. But I just think that it's kind of fascinating that you can get so many different opinions from so many different places. And again, it just has to deal with the set of numbers that they're looking at. Everybody makes the statistics work either to their advantage or disadvantage.
Oh, yeah. It reminds me of that old quote Mark Twain used to throw around. I don't think he's the actual source of it. I think it was the British Prime Minister Benjamin Disraeli said, there are three kinds of lies. Lies, damned lies, and statistics. So just keep that in mind.
Sure, yeah. Keep that in mind throughout this whole thing. Now, Ben, before we jump into today's topics, as I always like to do,
yeah,
maybe we should have a little bit of a chit-chat about some things that have happened recently because only a couple of things.
All right.
Yeah. Even minor, but I thought, somewhat interesting, somewhat car-related, so I thought I'd bring this up. First one is a real shocker. This happened to me on Sunday night. I was taking my kid to, Sunday evening teen thing at a church, local church. It's a big mega church type place,
Sure, sure.
And the week prior, I had had her in the parking lot there. We were practicing driving. It has this enormous parking lot, and they even have cones in a trailer that we can, just kind of borrow for an hour or two to kind of set up in the parking lot for practice, right?
Oh, that's cool.
So I don't have to buy my own cones for driving practice.
Yeah, right?
So it's really interesting. So it's fun place to go. And, this is all with their knowledge. They know you can do it.
Is she driving your car?
She is, yes.
Oh, man.
Driving my car, yeah. It's going well, very well. She's actually very adept at it.
You're not doing that thing where you push the phantom brake, are you?
No. I don't do that. She's actually quite controlled. Really, it's impressive to see her progress.
Well, that's great to hear, man. Yeah. What happened?
So here's what happened. We were there, and part of the driveway was blocked off for there's like almost like a main road that goes through the middle of this thing. It's a big place.
Mm-hmm.
So we noticed that it was blocked off, and we just kind of avoided it for that day. It was easy enough to get around, and I didn't know what they were doing. It was a little bit of light construction. So Sunday, this last Sunday, this is a week later. I'm driving through the parking lot. I'm a few minutes late to pick her up, which turned out not to be a big deal. Everything was running late anyways, but I'm going a little faster than I probably should have through the parking lot.
Okay.
And I found out what the construction was, and it was unmarked. So as I'm driving, I'm not going really, really fast, but maybe, in a parking lot, 25, 30, that's kind of quick.
You're doing like the auto equivalent of power walking.
Yeah, that's right. Without that ridiculous arm and hip wiggle.
It is a ridiculous arm and hip wiggle. I'll just objectively say that.
I was not doing that, but I was going probably a little bit too fast to the parking lot, I admit. But it's dark out, of course, and suddenly I hit this speed bump that was not there before, and it's not one of those like little bump speed bumps.
Mm.
This is where they, elevate a little bit of a sidewalk from curb to curb on each side. So it becomes like one of those – it's like a rise – a steep angle rise.
Yeah.
And then a 4 or 5 foot section for the sidewalk and then another drop off on the other side. It's one of those – I think they call them a speed hump or something
like
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I hit that stupid thing at about 30 miles an hour. And I had no – until I was midway through the air, I think, I didn't realize it. Like, I mean, I didn't realize what was going on. It was just – like, it appeared out of nowhere.
You caught some air?
Unintentionally, yes. And I was super ticked off about it.
Yeah.
I mean, there were no markings. It was all brand new. I was thinking, like, there's no way I got through this without
– messing up the undercarriage.
Destroying something.
Yeah.
Destroying something. I heard a little bit of scrape. You know, as I hit the other side, it wasn't the front bumper or anything like that. But I mean, I think it was in the air just a tiny little bit over that bump.
Man, because isn't it? Aren't they legally required to paint it or somehow indicate that
it's
a speed hump?
Sidewalk color, but it was a dark night. You know, and I don't even know if it was like I can't remember why it was so dark. It was maybe misty or something. I don't remember. But it just seemed like it just appeared out of nowhere.
Is your car okay?
It seems like it's all right, but I'm just so nervous right now.
I need to get under there, man.
Any little sound I hear now, I'm thinking like, that's that stupid bump that I hit. All right.
Right. All right. And a lot of times when an undercarriage gets messed up or scraped, even if it's just like a bottom bumper piece,
mm-hmm.
what can happen is that it will appear to drive normally until until it wears down over time. And next thing you know, maybe even like 3 weeks later, I've seen it happen to people where they get on the interstate, they get above, let's say, 45, 55.
Killing me.
I'm sorry, man, but it is worth checking because then, you know, you might have a piece fall off. We've all seen that.
Well, thankfully, I mean, I've been on the highway at highway speeds and I think it's okay. There's no shake or anything like that. And surprisingly, it turns well. It doesn't make any noises or anything like that. So I was more concerned about maybe, you know, accidentally knocking off the drain plug for my crankcase or something like that. You know, I was worried that I was going to lose all the oil all over the parking lot right there or something like that would happen. A coolant hose would break free or something. So it seems like everything's worked out okay. I'll keep you updated.
Yeah, please do, man. Please do.
Okay, and this is the last one. We'll make this one quick, but this is something absolutely ridiculous that I saw on one of my recent trips up north.
All right.
So I'm stopped at a gas station, you know, just fueling up, going to get a soft drink or something. I came back out. And there's a guy that is kind of messing around with this car that's on a trailer, and it's one of those tow dolly trailers. So it's, you know, two wheels up, two wheels down in the back. It's towed behind a pickup truck.
Right.
It's an older Dodge Stratus. It was like a light green, kind of like a mist green color.
Mm-hmm.
And it was clearly like a salvage car, you know, a wrecked car. You know, so missing pieces and things like that. This car, Ben, was on 4 Space Saver spare tires. 4. And I've never ever in my life seen a car on 4 Space Saver spares.
What?
And so, he's towing it down the road like that. Now, if it was 4 wheels down, it would look even more ridiculous. It already looked ridiculous on this trailer.
I have thought about that, but I don't think I've ever seen that in real life. And the reason you all heard my delayed reaction out there, friends and neighbors, is because I thought I would have a moment to sip some coffee away from the microphone.
Yeah, that was nearly a spit take moment there.
That was. That was.
Pretty close. Yeah. 4 Space Saver. So it's those real thin little ones and the ones that are undersized.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, you know, there's a variety on this car. Clearly it's like just a trying to get it from one junkyard to the next junkyard.
It doesn't
have
a matching set.
No, it's not a matching set. It didn't even look like a good set of 4, you know, Space Saver spares. It was ridiculous looking. Some had the big yellow sticker on the side.
That
warns you don't go over, 45 miles an hour or something like that? 35?
Or over a particular amount of miles.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I never saw it on the road. The times that we were passing, he was in the gas station. I wasn't on the street with him at any point. But, we're going down. That's I-75 was the main road right there. I'm hoping that he was staying, you know, on the smaller roads, you know, not on the main highway.
Yeah.
But ridiculous. It was just absolutely ridiculous to see this car with 4 Space Saver spares.
I mean, that's insane. And I'm so curious to hear the story of that car. Did the Stratus look beat up? Did it look like a junkyard?
Oh, it was terrible. Yeah, it was missing pieces. It was looked like it, you know, had been in several accidents.
Okay.
It was just scrap metal. You know, there was the ink pen writing on the windows, and you know, it was definitely it was destined for the shredder, possibly.
So somebody at the yard probably just tossed those tires on.
Yeah,
from
sure.
The wall of spares because they were going to try to resell any worthwhile tires.
Yeah, or components or whatever. Yeah, yeah, you're right. They probably nabbed the tires for something else, and then they had, you know, these four random tires laying around that fit, so they just put those on. I think it's just do what you can with it, you know?
Yeah, and this brings us to a very important moral that people don't say often enough. If you have a car that has a spare tire in the trunk, it doesn't take very long at all, as long as your trunk is relatively clean, before you hop in and drive today, whenever you're listening to this, go ahead and open the trunk. Just check on your spare tire.
Yeah, you know, that's a good lesson, because you remember when we left for the road rally with Rally North America last year?
Yeah.
I checked the spare right before we left. 0 pounds of pressure in it. Someone had not inflated the spare tire, and it's supposed to have like an excessive amount of pressure in
right.
it, you know, an extra amount of air pressure. And so I corrected that right away before the trip. I felt a lot better about it.
Uh-huh.
Now, I haven't checked it recently, so I don't know if it's, you know, back down again. But it's not unusual to see people on the side of the road with a bad spare. You know, they got mm-hmm. no air in the tire. Or, you know, it's down because it's cold weather or something like that. You know, and that's not good as well.
And not to be all curmudgeonly about it, but it seems like I've noticed, I'm relatively young, but I've noticed that even over my time as a driver, people are less and less likely to stop and help a stranded motorist.
Mm-hmm.
We've just heard too much stuff about what can go wrong or how it can be a con.
Well, right now it's a lot easier just to make a phone call with your cell phone as you'd pass
yeah.
and alert somebody to where the trouble's happening, and then allow, you know, the authorities or the you know, the hero crews, you know, the highway road assistance guys.
Highway emergency road.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Hero. That's hero. What they call them here. There are different things in different cities, I know. But yeah, it's just easier to let them with, you know, their compressors and their they probably even carry a spare tire. Just for that situation, I would guess.
Yeah.
Gallon of gas, that kind of thing.
Yeah, gallon of gas, probably spare tire, definitely copious amounts of fix-a-flat.
Mm-hmm.
Which
sure.
also, if you happen to check your trunk and you are one of those lucky car owners who has a can of fix-a-flat instead of a spare tire.
And a mini electric compressor.
Right. Then consider getting a different car. Just going to say it.
All right. Well, I think we've wasted enough time here at the beginning. But those were kind of interesting,
that
right?
That wasn't a waste of time.
Oh, okay. Sometimes I wonder.
I didn't mean to get into your head about some kind of disastrous highway driving thing.
Yeah.
It sounds like your car's fine.
Well, maybe. I'm going to have to really put it through its test now. But I'm going to be cautious for the next few months, maybe.
Yeah. And go ahead and you know, just get a lawsuit to the church anyway. Do like emotional distress. So
I'm not the litigating type.
Yeah. I'm on the same page with you there,
all
man.
Right.
But be that as it may, when we're talking about emotional distress, Scott, do you want to tell us some of the worst places to own a car here in the United States?
Hey, you want me to just come right out and just say the worst states? You want me to just do it?
Yeah.
I mean, I will, and we'll get to the why in just a moment.
Sure.
But let's just start with the best. How about that? Let's start positive here. So
okay, yeah.
The best states, according to Edmunds.com, is New Hampshire. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
South Dakota and South Carolina. Those are the top three. Which doesn't necessarily match up with our list last time, as I mentioned. Now, we're just talking about states here, not cities just yet. The most expensive states to own a car. We've kind of talked about that already, right? They have them listed as Hawaii, number one, California, and then Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Now, California is kind of the outlier in this, right? You would think that the distant locations of Hawaii and Alaska would make sense.
Right. And additionally, I mean, Hawaii makes sense just because it's an island. Everything has to be imported. So gas is going to be more expensive. Parking's going to be tight. I'm sure that going back to our earlier conversation, the fees and the insurance are going to be much higher. Alaska makes sense not just because of distance and maybe not even just because of gas prices, but because the weather is so punishing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're looking at a much more frequent maintenance cycle.
And a relatively sparse population, which means that you're typically having to take a vehicle a farther distance for any type of repairs or maintenance, things like that. You know, it's not that everybody's going to live right in the same small town and have, you know, that easy option like we often do here in the lower 48. Or elsewhere around the world, I guess, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the idea is that, you know, if you bought a car in Alaska or Hawaii, you'd expect it to cost more if you bought it like in, you know, like a Midwestern state, you know, Michigan or Ohio. But, of course, one of the reasons I guess we have to talk about it is freight cost, you know, getting the vehicle to that location, a brand
new
vehicle.
Right.
That's one thing. But gas prices are higher in different states. You'd also expect the car just to cost more in the long run. But here's the question, Ben. This is the main question in this article from Forbes. It comes from Forbes.com, by the way. Why should it cost – this is an unbelievable number. Why should it cost $9,000 more to own and operate a car in Connecticut than it does in New Hampshire, which is just 100 or so miles up the road?
$9,000.
$9,000 more. And you could just go – if you just were to live, you know, 100 miles down the road in New Hampshire – you would have a $9,000 cheaper burden from that vehicle. I don't know if that's the best way to say it or not. But this all comes from Edmunds.com. They have kind of a proprietary formula that they have called the true cost own.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you can call it the total cost of ownership or whatever. But they call it the official true cost own. And in that formula, I mean, well, here's – you have to understand this too. New Hampshire has no sales tax. All right. So that right away is a huge benefit.
Yeah.
The cost of everything from insurance to fuel and maintenance is also lower there. So imagine if you bought a $29,000 car. That would end up costing you $49,890 in this true cost to own formula over 5 years if you live in Connecticut. But if you lived in New Hampshire, you know, with the again, no sales tax and, you know, cheaper fuel, cheaper maintenance, everything, insurance, that same vehicle would only cost you $40,602. So just 100 miles away. But you can't just – you can't, you know, say that you live in Connecticut. You can't just drive to New Hampshire and buy the car and expect the same thing to happen because you've got your own state's taxes and insurance and gas and all that. I mean, it's not practical to do everything 100 miles away or to even have a separate address, you know, for stuff like this. I mean, that's a little bit, you know – I don't know.
That's a little
cheating.
That's a gray area.
Well, yes, people do it. I know, but you know, you probably shouldn't do it. People do that for stuff like, you know, in-state tuition, you know, things like that, or school. You know, just going to an elementary school. They claim that they live
They've
in
got
a different
their
district,
second cousin's address or something.
Yeah,
yeah, that's
PO box or something. You know,
right? That's pretty common. Or
yeah.
It used to be. I think more authorities are aware of the PO box trick.
Yeah.
Now.
But the truth is, you're not going to drive 100 miles to, let's say, to have your car serviced. You know,
right.
If you can have it serviced in your own hometown. I mean, sure, it sounds like a smart thing to do. I mean, it'd take you half a day to do it, but you know, to save a pile of money on maintenance, but. Really, when it comes down to it, your time is probably worth more than that. Just to stay in town and have it done there. It's a little more expensive, but that's just the way it works out.
But that's the thing. I would say it's a smart thing to tell someone else to do, but like a lot of advice, I probably wouldn't do it.
Well,
I'd be glad to tell someone to do it.
Yeah, sure. And of course, you know, the heavy costs come in, you know, with the adding of sales tax and the insurance, which is higher, you know, the fuel costs, which are higher. You know, you don't want to drive, you can't drive 100 miles to buy fuel. That's totally impractical too. So there's a lot of good reasons why this list is the way it is. So, you know, the prices, as we said, they vary state by state. And there's also, you know, regional incentives like, for destination and freight charges. They vary from the distance the car has to be shipped. Now, you might be surprised to learn that, you know, cars in Detroit are they often have shipping costs, but they're not nearly as much as it would be if you were to ship a car to Alaska, say.
Yes.
I mean, let's say if a car is an import, it's coming from overseas. Of course, it's going to be a higher shipping cost or shipping fee than a car that arrives from, you know, something that's built in Mexico or something that is built in, I don't know, Minnesota or wherever, right? Wherever these assembly factories are. So I guess we need to talk about this formula just a little bit, if that's
sure.
All right.
Yeah, the true cost to own.
Yes, exactly. So this formula takes note of where you live, and it calculates your average five-year cost for depreciation, financing, taxes, fees, insurance premium, fuel costs, maintenance and repairs on a range of all like new and used vehicles. So you can go to Edmunds.com and check out this calculator that they have, and it will tell you what it costs to own a vehicle for 5 years based on all these factors. But you have to include a bunch of – not a bunch, but a certain amount of personal information, just the state and city that you live in. It's not anything really – you know, you don't have to give them your
social
your phone number or anything like that. But the Edmunds analysts come up with a series of weighted averages by state, and that's how they determine, you know, what the best and worst states are. Now, we've told you the best ones are New Hampshire, South Dakota, and South Carolina. Hawaii, California, and Alaska are the most expensive, with Hawaii being the number one most expensive state. But the gap – this is really interesting. The gap between the cheapest state, which is, of course, New Hampshire, and then the most expensive, which is Hawaii, $13,000 is the average gap.
Right, and – the weird thing is, although that's the most extreme version, there's a disturbing amount of variation state to state. And it's all – it all goes back to taxes, fees, costs of insurance. So in Oregon, for instance, or Oregon, which is apparently the way I'm supposed to be pronouncing this.
I don't know how I used to live in I'd say Oregon, Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
It was right outside of Toledo, yeah. But when I say Oregon, I get, you know, the raised eyebrows from the guy here in the office that was from the state of Oregon.
Yeah. But that's the guy who also says Oregon. Wait, what is this? Is this like his word?
Tomato, tomato.
Sure, but tomato, obviously.
Sure, of course.
So just write in and let me know if you are a resident of Oregon or Oregon. Tell me how you prefer it to be.
Let's use them interchangeably here.
Let's do it. Okay. Yeah. Let's switch it up. So point being, if you live in that state, if you live in Oregon, you will pay an average of just $129 in fees yearly. Mm-hmm. But in Arizona, if with all other factors being the same, you're looking at an average of $4,346 in fees.
Whoa, huge difference there. I mean, really big difference. So, but the insurance, if you look at the insurance numbers, is cheapest in South Dakota with about $4,723.
Because there are like no other cars to hit, right?
Yeah, that might be the case. Yeah, something like that. And the most expensive state to insure a car is Alaska again, believe it or not. About an average of about $11,481.
That's what always startles me. I know it makes sense when we think about it.
Now, these are 5-year totals. We should.
These
mention.
Are our five. Yes, that is
okay.
True.
Yeah, yeah.
That is not you're not getting hit up for $12,000 every year.
No.
But to the point, it seems strange to me that Alaska is such an expensive state to live in.
Yeah.
I know the math makes sense and the geography makes sense and it does work out, but I just always expected it to be a state that was hungry for people to live there, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And if you want people to move to a state, shouldn't you try to lower those fees?
Yeah, give them a little incentive, right?
Yeah. Wet the whistle a little, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just for corporations, right? I mean, it should offer some of that to citizens as well.
Yeah, and this problem is not just restricted to those states we named. In West Virginia and Louisiana, 5 years of insurance also runs you about $11,000.
Ooh, but a lot cheaper if you're here in Georgia or North Dakota, where you pay about half of that amount. So half of that amount, that's crazy, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, you pay 100% more for insurance in depending on which state you live in, and some of these states are close.
And then labor rates for service technicians can vary as well. So your local mechanic, again, all other things being the same except for the state in which you live, your local mechanic may have a different rate for the exact same fix, the exact same repair.
And we also have to take into consideration some of the states that have no sales tax. There's a lot of states that have no sales tax. So that means that parts cost less right up front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And we don't have to get too bogged down in this. You can kind of see where – you can kind of see the snowball effect. You can
sure.
see where this is going. This sort of stuff also impacts, for instance, a car loan. So if you go to Crazy Super Producer Tyler's new and used Mustangs and you go to the one in New Hampshire – you're going to get a better deal than you would if you went to the one in Arizona. This is a national franchise, by the way.
Hmm. National franchise. I get you. Yeah. I didn't know that he was quite the used car baron. Oh, new and used car baron.
New right? and used.
Yeah.
New and used. They're keeping... new when you buy them. They're used when they leave the lot.
Keeping a secret from us, I guess. So, yeah, I mean, you pay higher sales tax and more interest on your car loan if you buy a more expensive vehicle. I mean, it makes sense, right? I mean, it all this really is pretty straightforward stuff. I mean, you know that prices are different. You know, like let's say that you've been on a long road trip and you notice that, you know, as you cross the state line, suddenly gas is 50 cents more a gallon. That happens all the time. And you think, what the heck is the deal? Around my hometown, I'm paying, let's make something up, $2.15 a gallon.
Mm-hmm.
And I get up here, you know, to the northern states and it's $2.85 a gallon. What gives? You know,
right.
Why is that? But that's not just the gasoline that they're paying more for. They're also sometimes it depends on the city, I guess. If it's you live in a big metro area that has high crime rate, theft, you know, et cetera, vandalism, whatever, you're going to pay more for insurance just because of your zip code mm-hmm. than if you live outside of that city, you know, in a small suburb that's, you know, 40 or 50 miles north of there or in a completely different state. We're talking about states so far. We're going to get to cities very soon, but let's do that after the first break from our sponsor.
And here's where it gets even stranger. I have this obsession with the bizarre statistics we discover whenever we look into, you know, the best or worst place to drive, the amount of car accidents, the mm-hmm. amount of thefts, the ease or difficulty of navigating through traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have found some pretty interesting stuff here. There's this weird contradiction between the best cities to live in. You know, you'll see numerous studies on that seems like every other month. But the best cities to live in often turn out to be some of the worst cities to own a car in.
Yeah, isn't that strange? I was noticing the exact same thing as we went through here because some of these are earmarked as, you know, it's the ninth best place. According to U.S. News and World Report, that's who we're following here in this list, the 10 worst cities to own a car. And we'll follow it up with best cities. But, yeah, it's weird that the worst cities to own a car are oftentimes the best places to live. And it just seems like a strange mix. But I guess they don't really have to be in the same column, you know? I mean,
right.
they don't have to be. I mean, a lot of times we'll find that public in all of these, they'll give us an alternate, like a public transportation version
sure.
or a lot of people bike or, you know, walk or whatever. But we'll mention that along the way too. So if you're not necessarily someone who feels like you have to own a car, and in these cities you probably shouldn't, there's an alternate, or there always is an alternate.
So one example of this would be Washington, D.C.
Hmm.
According to several rankings, it's often in the top 10 best places to live list, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you live there or even in the D.C. area, you're going to have terrible, horrific traffic.
Oh, have you ever been to D.C.? You have been to D.C., right?
Yeah, many times.
And you've
sat
in that traffic. You know exactly what they're talking about. It says, they put it in this article, enraging traffic. And you're going to have to sit in that twice a day if you commute. You know, hardly anybody lives in downtown D.C., really.
Right.
You always commute from the suburbs and we're, you know, right in the outlying area there, I guess. So even just those short distances, those short drives, you're going to be in the car for a long time. I don't think we want to, you know, quote commute times for every single one of these cities as we go through, but the average one-way commute time in Washington, D.C. is 34.3 minutes, which is among the longest of any U.S. city. So they get worse from here, I guess, but it's not necessarily the worst, if you want to put it that way. So these long commute times, that's one factor. Gas is expensive. Insurance is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like repairs are expensive as well. Like,
accidents are more common.
I
can verify that too.
Uh-huh.
Because one of the old things I used to hear about D.C. often was when my friends who were in the area because they worked for the feds or something, they would say, D.C. is the most dangerous place I've driven because so many people here have diplomatic immunity.
Like, drive with free will, just whatever.
I got to say, I wonder if there's some truth in that. I can't verify that at all.
Free will? Did I use that right? I don't know. I guess just drive not recklessly, but with abandon. How about that?
Right, that's
a better way to say it. How about drive with abandon?
The embassy can give me another Lincoln.
I'm going to triple park this car on the curb and it'll be fine.
It is pretty insane. I actually – there are some amazing, beautiful places outside of D.C., but in D.C., I rarely say this. I would typically prefer a cab. If I had nothing to do for a day, I would enjoy driving around parts of New York.
Yeah.
But if I had nothing to do for a day in D.C., I would probably just hop on a cab because those streets are insane, man.
Well, we told you we would suggest alternates for each one of these, right?
Yeah.
Cab, I guess, would be one of them. Of course, you could take a cab.
But that adds up.
They suggest, get this, biking, which I don't think I would venture out onto those roads on a bike. I mean, I've been there. And or bus or, you know, of course, there's a train there as well. They have a Metropolitan Area Transit Authority, you know, I guess both bus and train. That's who runs that one. So, I don't know. You get a couple of options there, but again, biking, I don't think that's maybe your best option.
It's not for everybody.
I just don't feel it. No, I mean, I think it's a little bit too dangerous. That's the way I am, though. I don't like seeing bikes in traffic. It's hard.
Oh, yeah.
It just seems like it's a bad fit. All right, next one, Philadelphia.
Yes, Philadelphia, home to the Liberty Bell, former capital of the United States. Named the City of Brotherly Love. Word is still out on whether that is like a ironic or sincere nickname. And it's just any way you look at it, it's not the best place to own a car.
No. So insurance is expensive. Gas is expensive. They've got high taxes. So you noticing a trend here? I mean, it seems like in every one of these so far, you know, insurance, gas, repairs, you know, maintenance, that kind of thing. Slow commute times, very slow commute times, nearly as slow as Washington, D.C., but just a little bit quicker. Very little parking. That's another factor that's big, is that it's a congested city, densely populated, of course, especially at certain times of day when people, you know, come into the city for work and then, you know, I guess while they're there all day. Very little parking is available. And they do offer a couple of alternatives, though, a lot like Washington, D.C., a lot like all of the other cities that we're going to talk to you about. They suggest that they have, you know, a light rail system that's pretty good. They have a bus bus transit system that's pretty good. And also, this is somewhat unique for this city. They say it's walkable.
Right.
Very, very walkable.
Right. Once you're in the downtown or major city center areas.
That's the problem. You have to get downtown first. So if you don't live there, if you live just outside, you have to come in for work or whatever, you need some way to get in. So you're probably going to take the bus in. But once you're there, you can then walk around. Maybe this list is talking about, you know, people that actually live in Philadelphia proper. No.
Yeah, perhaps.
I mean, you don't need a car necessarily. If it's a walkable city.
Yeah. Full disclosure, I have not visited Philadelphia yet, but I'm probably going to be up there in spring, I think spring or summer. I got some friends who are moving up Philadelphia way, and they invited me to drop by, and they're like, well, you know, I'm thrifty, Scott. So my question was, is there a place I can crash, or do I, you know, need to get a hotel room? So I'm looking forward to the drive up there. Mm-hmm. I would always rather drive if I have the time, you know.
Sure.
So we'll see.
You can save that hotel money for cheesesteaks.
Yeah, and apparently parking spaces. We'll see if I can find one.
Well, that's good. Keep us up to date on that. If you know, you like it, you don't like it, you enjoy walking around the city because it's walkable.
Right.
Supposedly.
Of course, I'm asking, and I want to hear from you about this, folks. Anybody familiar with Philadelphia or currently residing in it, I would love to hear your advice because my friend is moving back up there. Weirdly enough, all he does is complain about the city, and then he says it's awesome.
I think everybody does that about their own city a little bit, right?
Right, yeah. I can't rag on it.
Yeah.
I can't even agree with him when he's, you know, we're a family show, let's say, when he's whinging and moaning about it. but this is another common thing. Parking. In the case of D.C. as well, I hated having to find a place to put a car. That was almost as bad as the traffic because Washington, D.C. has some of the most cartoonishly intricate parking rules, and they're displayed on these signs that change, and you have to like stand out there and sort of try to interpret what they mean.
Mm-hmm. Look at your watch to determine what time it is because it's changing in a half an hour.
Right.
I get you.
And our next city on the list is going to be no surprise to anybody, and that is New York City.
New York City! Sorry, I couldn't resist.
It's one of the best commercials.
I know.
Everybody remembers that.
That's, you know, the last 10 or so episodes we've said that twice now.
That commercial got me eating salsa. Anyway, point being.
Long commute times. Of course, as you can imagine, we're talking about downtown New York City, probably Manhattan. And I know that they're going to mention, you know, the other boroughs, you know, Brooklyn, Queens, Bronx, you know, et cetera.
Sure.
But I think primarily we're talking about downtown New York, Manhattan area.
Right. So everything's expensive. All the stuff we've mentioned before is higher than the national average.
Oh, high taxes, high insurance premiums. You got expensive gas. You got very little parking.
Yeah,
long commutes, you know, because, I mean, I've heard tales of cars that, you know, they say they're in gridlock, and we think we're in gridlock, right? I mean, we do roll 10 feet and then wait.
Sure.
In Manhattan, you might roll the distance of, like, you know, one rotation of your tire and then wait.
And then get mobbed by 20 people just running out in the street, because another thing that New York has far above the national average is a wealth of people. It has an extremely high population density, and a lot of those folks may be tourists who are not practicing crosswalk rules. I mean, what am I saying, man? Last time I was in New York, I was totally jaywalking left and right. It was like a Mad Max kind of situation.
That's because
it's what
you do there. Everybody does that there. I mean, I've been there too. It seems like it's chaotic, really, at times, right?
Yeah, and the cab drivers have made their peace with life, and they are not afraid of what comes after. You know what I mean?
It's a blood sport,
dude. I've been in some cabs in some pretty rough areas, and even in a nice part of New York, in downtown Manhattan, you know, this guy is driving, is making casual conversation with me and while he's swerving across four lanes of traffic.
Oh boy.
You know, it's
bad news.
I would be interested to see one day I'm going to nail down some pretty solid stats on cab drivers and accident rates.
Good luck. I think they keep those covered up a little bit.
They probably want to.
They probably have to. All right.
Yeah.
So, you know, one thing that this kind of all feeds into, and we haven't really even discussed this yet.
Yeah.
Stress.
Driver
stress plays a huge role in, you know, whether a city is good to drive in or whether it's bad to drive in, or whether, you know, to own a car, I guess. If you want to take on the stress of commuting in a city every single day, you know, that's something that's not for everybody. Some people just can't take it. You know, it leads to road rage. It leads to just anxiety in general. You know, like you're nervous about where you're going to park when you get downtown. You're nervous about leaving the car alone if there's a lot of theft and vandalism
right.
in the area. Stress is a huge part of this whole factor. So, you know, very stressful driving in the city. Again, we said high population density. That's another thing, is that you're constantly, you know, your head's on a swivel looking for, you know, somebody walking in front of you, somebody biking, you know, kind of splitting the lanes between you and the next car. It's a stressful situation, but they do suggest there are alternatives, of course. One of the suggestions, or one of the best suggestions in New York City, is the subway. I mean, everybody knows about the New York subway. It's a complex system.
21 lines.
Yeah, I mean, it's a large, large system. You can get to just about anywhere you need to within the city via subway, and then, you know, short walking distance. They have other options too. They have regular trains. They have a ferry that operates, of course.
From Staten Island to Manhattan.
Yes, I've taken that ferry, by as a matter of fact.
Yeah, it's a great ride.
Just as a sightseeing thing, it wasn't trying to get anywhere.
You weren't going to work.
No. But they also suggest again with the biking. Why do they have to say biking? I just think it's a dangerous situation to put yourself into in New York City, biking. But I know a lot of people do it.
Yeah,
but
bike couriers have more success in traffic.
Check out videotapes. Video recordings. How about that? That's better, right? Video recordings of some bike messengers in downtown New York, like Manhattan area.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty crazy.
Let's stay on the Eastern Seaboard as we visit the next city that I completely agree should be on this list and should never leave, because part of me is still stranded trying to drive through the Big Dig. That's right, folks. Boston, mm-hmm. another major city that makes things terrible for drivers. Because you see, Boston was a booming metropolis before the era of automobiles. Mm-hmm. So these, in many cases, these are streets designed for pedestrians and horses and carriages.
Sure. Yeah, you got the old-time carriages and wagons going through the town, right? And it really didn't matter if it was laid out in an efficient grid-like pattern, you know, north and south,
right?
East and west. It wasn't laid out in a manner that a lot of modern cities are laid out in, a more logical way.
There's no grid.
Yeah.
No north-south kind of grid like mm-hmm. Scott's mentioning.
Yeah.
Instead, what happens?
Yeah, they got twisty, windy roads in the city that will just sometimes just end. They'll end at another road and you don't know where to go from that point. Unless you are really familiar with the city, it's very complicated. It's very confusing.
It reminds me a little bit of the Winchester Mansion, that where the widow of the guy who invented the Winchester rifle believed she had to make this mm-hmm. crazy mansion for all the people who died due to the Winchester rifle. And there are stairs that just don't go anywhere.
I saw there's a movie poster. I went to see a movie recently, and there's a movie poster for a movie about the Winchester Mansion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I guess the sequel is going to be The Roads of Boston.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I guess you're right. But anyways, watch for that coming soon. So they have this difficult road layout. I mean, it's not a north to south oriented grid like you might expect. Insurance is expensive, as you would guess in that type of city, because you've been there, so you know.
Yeah.
I was there one evening. I know we've talked about this. I was there one evening, just kind of stopped in to have dinner on my way through there to somewhere else. And picked the wrong time. It was rush hour. I don't know if I've ever been that close to other vehicles for as long as, outside of leaving maybe like a sporting event.
Right, right.
Where there's really no lanes, it seems.
And you could reach out and touch the glass of the car
next
to you.
Yeah, I swear to you, like we weren't in lanes and everyone was like a foot off of your car in all directions. Front, back, left side, right side, all the way around. And you're just trying to get, to a parking spot, you're trying to get to a parking structure or wherever, park outside of the – hopefully within the block of the restaurant that you're trying to get to.
Right.
It was a really difficult time to be there. And I know that you've had even more frustration when you went through that Big Dig construction project. We've talked about that too. It was rough.
I don't want to have to.
Let's not relive
bring that
it.
Up
you want to relive it?
No, not this. But I do want to give a little bit of good news about Boston after a word from our sponsors. All right, here's what I think of as good news about Boston. The average commute time is just under 30 minutes, which is way lower than I thought it would be, and that's probably because I was there during extensive construction.
That was probably it, yeah. But there's more good news, Ben. They suggest that if you don't want to drive, you don't want to jump in the car every day and try to make that commute, they have a Boston subway system, but it's also a very old system, I guess, kind of an older underground rail system. They do suggest walking, but because the winters there are so brutal, it's not a possibility all of the time. You don't want to rely on being able to walk, somewhere across town because it's just not possible. So you got this old subway system, and hopefully that's good enough. And I'm sure they've got, bus systems as well, but they don't even mention that as a possible option here. So I'm guessing that maybe it's not one of the best bus systems in town.
Right.
Or in the States.
This next one on the list surprised me.
I don't know. This one did come up on the Wallet Hub as being one of the worst as well.
Yeah.
It was the third worst on the Wallet Hub survey, and I guess it's a little bit higher on this list if you want to look at it that way. So,
sure.
Yeah, I don't know. This one really surprised you though, huh?
I think it's just every time that I see Detroit on a list of something bad that's automotive related, I feel a little bit sad.
You would think it would be the best, wouldn't you?
I mean, you would assume
it's the Motor City. You would think that they would cater to automobiles and automobile owners and drivers, and they kind of do. I mean, it's not really so much that. It's just that your insurance premiums are going to be extremely high due to theft and vandalism, as we've known. What's gone on in Detroit recently in the last, 50 years or more.
Yeah.
How long? Even longer than that, probably. But they pay over double the national average for insurance premiums. So that's one thing that makes it just horrible for car owners if you live in the city proper.
And Michigan has something called no-fault policies mm-hmm. that all car drivers and owners must have.
Yeah, right? Sure.
So this can make things more expensive in general. Gas is more expensive, also surprising. The commute isn't too bad, 26 and a half minutes.
It's a little bit longer than average. Not much. Yeah.
It has no subway system, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. there is a bus system, but what do you think of that, Scott?
Okay, I'll tell you what I think of that. Have you ever – well, no, you probably haven't, but imagine riding a city bus in downtown Detroit. I don't think many people would necessarily think that's a great idea to do that.
Yeah.
It's a rough go. It really is. It's not – I'm trying to be gentle about this.
Sure.
But it's a rough crowd.
There's urban blight.
Yeah. You counter on the city buses and you go through some pretty rough areas. So that's kind of the way that stands right now. That's always been – it's not always been the case, but for a long time that's been the case. And then we know that the trolley car – scandal that did away with any kind of trolley cars or rail cars that were, you know, electric cars that were running from the suburbs down to the Detroit center, like the city center. We've talked about that in the past, the trolley car scandal.
Yeah.
I think people know about that. Now, they do have something. They don't have a subway, but they do have an elevated train. They call it a people mover. Mm-hmm. And it's almost kind of a joke among people that live there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it really is. It's 3 miles. And it has 13 stations, and it goes to some of the major centers. You know, it goes to, you know, the Cobb Center, which is the convention center. It goes to Joe Louis Arena, which now, I don't know if it still goes there. They're tearing that down. Greektown, you know, the Renaissance Center. Some of the main, I guess you would call it, business hubs and, places that people go for recreation.
Mm.
You know, if you can imagine, some people still go downtown for recreation, downtown Detroit. You know, there's still some areas that are nice to go and shop in and, you know, watch sporting events, things like that. I mean, it happens, but not with such frequency that, you know, they need anything more than this, you know, short little people mover train to get people back and forth from where they need to go.
And we're noticing as we explore these cities that all the cities who rank as worst or best – which we still haven't gotten to, have we?
Yeah, we'll just laundry list those.
Okay.
Yeah,
because if you live in them, you already know. All the cities that are the worst have a lot of the same things in common. So I propose that we, you know, I propose we go through the next ones and just point out any differences.
Can I just say one thing here before
we move on? Yeah.
I feel like I have to stick up for Detroit a little bit here.
I'm surprised you haven't.
I have to. I mean, because I was saying some bad things, some disparaging things about it right there, but it is on one of the worst lists, right?
Yeah.
So I had to say what is really making it a bad situation down there. There's a lot of good things about Detroit too. So if you get a chance, look into it. There's some good things happening there as well. All right. So let's move a little faster through, through this. And I don't know why I felt I had to do that. I have to stand up for
you. You're a loyal guy.
I guess. I mean, anyway, so Chicago's next.
Oh, yeah,
Chicago.
Windy City.
Yeah, the Windy Apple. No, wait.
It's the Big Wind?
Yeah, something like that. The Windy City.
Yeah, again, gas, taxes, fees on purchasing vehicles, all higher. All the fees
are higher. Long commute times.
Right.
Very little parking. When you do find parking, it's very expensive. I know that from firsthand knowledge. Again, stressful. They have bad winters. They have bad roads in the spring because of those bad winters. So, you know, every spring you have to deal with, you know, the freeze-thaw situation that creates potholes and, you know, bad roads. So there's that to deal with. But they do have a couple of good options.
Right. There's the L, which is the fairly expansive public train system.
Mm-hmm.
There are also bike lanes.
Why do they keep forcing biking on us?
Oh, man. You know, I have my bike at work here.
Yeah, I know you do. Yeah. But you don't venture out into the actual deep part of the city. I mean, like where heavy traffic is and stuff, do you?
Not really. I like to bike around in the neighborhoods around here.
Yeah, there's parks and there's all kinds of places to go. And lightly traveled roads versus, you know, some of the really intense downtown parts. Like when they're talking about biking in Manhattan or biking in Chicago, I know that Chicago has some park areas as well, some outlying areas. And that's probably what they're talking about, I hope.
Now we're going to a city on the list that may surprise some people, but I doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
A city that is home to apparently some of the worst drivers in the country.
Yeah, that's according to U.S. News and World Report, though. Not us.
Not us.
Now, we haven't done an official survey, but yeah, isn't it something that they have some of the country's worst drivers there? And You know what that means? It means high insurance premiums for that area too, because you're likely to get in an accident if you drive in Miami.
Yep, that's right. We're talking about Miami. Also has all the greatest hits of worst cities to own a car in. It's got high taxes, very high population, high commute time, just under 28 minutes on average.
But generally good weather. That's the plus column, right?
Yeah, there you go. That's optimistic. Yeah, generally good weather.
Yeah, outside of the hurricane that hits there sometimes.
Ouch. Yeah. Public buses, two train systems, but they don't go everywhere.
Yeah.
So in some cases, if you live in the burbs around the area, you're just going to have a car.
Yeah, that's just kind of bad luck. I mean, two train systems, but none of them go out to the suburbs. So, you have to put up with the daily commute. Moving on. West Coast again. Los Angeles. Now, I would have thought Los Angeles would place even higher on this list, but it's very crowded, of course. It's expensive. There's packed freeways, which are, notoriously packed freeways, I guess. However, this is a little bit weird. They have better commute times in LA than they do in New York and DC.
Which is strange because we hear so much about how difficult traffic is in Los Angeles. I mean, even Saturday Night Live made a bunch of skits that continually return to that as a joke in the Californians.
Oh, sure. Trying to detail their way around town, like with too much detail, right?
Right.
Yeah. But for everybody else.
But a lot of people, the average person, does feel like they must be a car owner to live in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. and it becomes a very expensive proposition.
Yeah, because of high gas prices, high insurance. Mm-hmm. They pay, 61% higher than the national average for insurance. 61%, that's pretty high. They have expensive repairs and maintenance as well. There's alternates, though, as you might guess.
Sure, yeah. You can ride the metro rail to work if it happens to hit the area where your job is at.
Well, it's likely that it will. I mean, it has 93 stations in the greater L.A. area. So 93 stations, that's an awful lot of stations for this metro rail system. So if you do happen to have that, you're in good shape. If not, you're commuting with the rest of us.
And Los Angeles is not on a list that we found of best places to live, but San Francisco is. Mm-hmm. And look, San Francisco, beautiful town. No secret that the weather in California is wonderful. And San Francisco does rank, consistently in the top 10 of places to live, except for the fact that it is insanely expensive. And I think pretty recently, a few years back, San Francisco became home to the most expensive, real estate, more so than Manhattan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. I knew it was expensive. I didn't know it was that expensive.
Well, they can't build anything else because they have zoning laws. Oh. They got, they're bounded in by the bay.
Yeah, geography binds them, I guess, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so gas is expensive, insurance is expensive, although insurance is only 32% above the national average compared to Los Angeles, where it was 61. So 32% higher for anybody in San Francisco, those residents, they're paying for insurance. And again, it's a great place to live. It's beautiful and all that.
Right.
But it's not for everybody. And one surprise to me, Ben, was that they have longer commute times than Los Angeles does. So it seems like the LA commute is not all that bad, really. You always hear about how bad it is, but it's not as bad as New York, not as bad as DC, not as bad as San Francisco even. Must be an efficient system in some way. I mean, they just have such a volume of cars to get through there. They do have, however, a couple suggestions to get around San Francisco. Now, one of them I think is funny, the trolleys. The trolleys have a limited run. That's mostly for the tourists, I think. And, of course, it goes down to the financial district, I believe.
Sure.
So you can use it for that. They do suggest walking and biking in the city, which would be very difficult.
It's hilly terrain.
I've done that in the past, visiting some friends. It was awful.
and then, of course, BART.
Trying to bike in San Francisco, that was ridiculous.
I would rather walk.
I almost had a heart attack, and I was only about 20 years old.
Oh, really?
No, I mean, it felt that way. I mean, it was just ridiculously difficult. Yeah, and BART. You mentioned BART. That's the Bay Area Rapid Transit System. They've got more than one line, too. They got 6 lines and 45 stations. So you can pretty much get around town that way if you need to. And the last one on our worst list, Ben.
Uh-huh.
And then we'll just quickly go through the best.
Sure.
Seattle.
Yes, Seattle. Seattle, Washington. It's also consistently ranked as one of the best places to live, but it has a problem in addition to the more expensive rates of everything across the board to one degree or another. Seattle is in the position of having choke points due to the bridges. It's wedged between the Puget Sound and Lake Washington, so there are only a few bridges that can accommodate the traffic of a major metropolis.
So here, this is another geography situation.
Right.
It's kind of trapped in between these two bodies of water. So interesting that, you know, that's one thing that leads to extra congestion, you know, the few bridges. I think if anybody has visited, you know, barrier islands or anything like that, you know, down in Florida or any island really, mm-hmm. you know the trouble that goes along with that, you know, everybody trying to get back and forth across that one bridge, or maybe, you know, even if it's two or three bridges, it's still very difficult at certain times of day. So I completely understand that, but they're adding, you know, of course, high cost for repairs, gasoline. It's a difficult city to get around, I guess, but it's a beautiful city. I mean, if you're into it for the natural beauty, the natural scenery, you know, if you're okay with that long commute and just kind of staring out the window at how pretty it is in Seattle, that's fine. But I think a lot of people get a little bit frustrated with, you know, the longer commute times. They do suggest biking to work, of course. Of course.
Of course.
Why could we not end this list with another biking suggestion?
Oh man, this is really getting to you.
They have, of course, public bus and light rail as well. So, you know, those are two other options. But, that's an extensive list. And, you know, what I said at the early part of this, you know, it was based on a different criteria than our other list. And that's why it's completely different, you know, with the commute times, the fuel prices, the insurance prices, the taxes, the maintenance costs, population density, stress, all that, you know, factors into today's list. Mm-hmm. And I promise you we'd talk about the best U.S. cities, to drive a car in, and we should just go ahead and list these off. And now I said these were completely different from the Wallet Hub study
right.
list.
So yeah.
The best and worst were completely different. So, the best cities to drive a car in. Raleigh, North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, Cincinnati, Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio, Kansas City, Missouri, St. Louis, Missouri, Denver, Colorado, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Birmingham, Alabama, and Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, Richmond, Virginia, I can personally vouch for. And you've probably, if you're a fan of road trips, you've probably driven through several of these.
You know, the only one that matched up with our Wallet Hub study was mm-hmm. Raleigh, North Carolina. That was number 10 on their list,
mm-hmm.
and the rest weren't even on the list at all.
Which is strange.
Yeah, we had a lot of places that were in the Southwest. We had, you know, places from Texas and Arizona. Just kind of rounding out, they had a lot of places from Texas and Arizona on that list. So just a different list altogether because of the different criteria.
Another thing I saw that is pretty fascinating is that the best cities to drive in seem to change more rapidly than the worst cities.
Is that right? Because it's tougher to improve.
I think
it
might be.
Easier to decline.
Right. I think you're right. And then also on the state level, the improvements or the improvements or the disrepair of states seems to also take a longer time frame.
Interesting.
You know? Yeah. So right now, if you live in New Hampshire, it's safe to say you're going to be one of the most fortunate car owners in the United States for a while.
Yeah, cost-wise.
Cost-wise. And if you live in Hawaii or Alaska, it's not going to get better.
No, it's beautiful, but yeah, it's going to be expensive for you.
Right. But I would hope, you know, a lot of people have adjusted to that going in. And it's strange that you and I and our super producer, Tyler, are in a relatively good position. I mean, we're not in the catbird seat of car owners, but Georgia is not that bad.
Yeah, we're always somewhere in the middle, which always surprises me because traffic is just so maddening here. Mm-hmm. It really is.
I would love for Georgia to have some sort of superlative in here, even hopefully one of the good ones, but mm-hmm. hopefully not one of the worst ones. I do want to say one statistic that we should mention. Fresno, California. I think we may have mentioned this previous episode, but I want everybody to know Fresno, California is one of the worst cities that you'll see pop up sometimes. I don't know if we got to it in our last episode.
No, we did not.
It's for a very simple reason. In addition to all the California fees and taxes and higher price of gas, Fresno, California is often and repeatedly the car theft capital of the United States.
Ah, I see. Okay.
So drive through it, but, you know, don't park overnight.
Don't stop. Don't stop. No, you can stop there, I guess, but don't try to buy insurance there because it's going to be sky high.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not it is a true statistic, but I'm not saying that your car will instantly be stolen if you park it. I'm just saying, though, numbers are there.
Maybe like when you go in the restaurant, sit where you can see your car.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a suggestion.
I do that anyway.
I do that, too. I try to if I can. My wife thinks I'm crazy. But I like to do that.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to do it. Mm-hmm. This is going to conclude our episode. I know we went a little long, but we thought it was interesting how changeable these things can be and how every city – while they have these common factors making them the best or the worst place, how they all have their own unique fingerprints, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That in many cases will never change.
There's usually one or two standout, you know, situations, I guess. Not situations, but factors that make it the worst. Like the 61% increase in insurance in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
That's a standout for them. The theft and vandalism in Detroit, that makes it a standout because it's significantly higher than in other places on this list. So there's usually one thing. If you read between the lines on some of this, you'll find that, you know, one thing is worse than the other.
And with that, we do hope you enjoyed this episode, and we want to hear from you. What's the weirdest thing about where you drive? You know, does your city or does your town or does your state have some strange quirk that we outsiders wouldn't be hip to?
Yeah, I mean, even if this is like a one stoplight town, just tell us about it. We're interested in, you know, what makes every city different, and tell us what you know, what unique experiences you have on your daily commute. You know, whether it's having to dodge herds of elk on the road, you know, if
right.
you're in a remote area, or if it's you know, like in Manhattan or something, where, you know, your drive to work is 3 miles, but it takes you 45 minutes.
Holy smokes.
Or something like that, you know, or longer even.
Yeah, so we want to hear from you. Scott and I are going to hit the road today. We will be back very soon. In the meantime, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and our brand new Instagram, where you can see all sorts of stories from not just us, but also your fellow listeners. And some of them may make it to the air. So consider that a way to get behind the curtain a little bit. You can find every episode that we have ever done in the history of our show on our website, carstuffshow.com. And, of course, you can write to us directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.